In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 388. We are talking about the police state issue once again today with John Whitehead, who joins us once again because he now has a book called Battlefield America, The War on the American People, and it covers such a range of topics. It is absolutely breathtaking, and it turns out that things are worse than you thought. And we're going to get some details from John today. Make sure and stick around after my conversation with John Whitehead, because I have an important correction I want to make to something I said a couple of episodes ago. But for this episode, the show notes page will be tomwoods.com/388. There you can get the previous interview I did with John Whitehead, and also a link to Battlefield America and other fun things. So do please check out tomwoods.com/388. John Whitehead is president of the Rutherford Institute, which he founded back in 1982. You can check them out at rutherford.org. It's a nonprofit civil liberties and human rights organization headquartered in Charlottesville, Virginia. He and the Institute gained international renown as a result of his role as co-counsel in Paula Jones's sexual harassment lawsuit against President Clinton. John is the author of over two dozen books, dozens of law review articles. He's also written for the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, and USA Today. And today we talk about his book, Battlefield America, featuring a foreword by Ron Paul. Here we go, my conversation with John Whitehead. Hope you enjoy it. John Whitehead, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks a lot, Tom.
Well, you've got this new book, Battlefield America, The War on the American People, and it's a follow-up to your very good-selling book, A Government of Wolves, The Emerging American Police State. So let me give you a chance here, before we get into any specifics, to give the listeners an overview of this book, how it's different from the previous one, but you're covering an enormous amount of ground here, but yet through all the specifics that you're giving, there runs a fairly ominous theme. What is that?
That we're living in a police state. There's no doubt about that right now. And a police state is basically defined by surveillance of citizens, violence towards citizens by government agents, militarization of government agents, and on down the line. We're seeing all that right now. So the statistics out there don't lie. It's really zoomed since 9/11. I'd say we're the last 20 years, the face of the country has changed in terms of how government agents view us. I've had the unique opportunity since writing Battlefield America of dealing with a number of former Secret Service agents who just meet and talk to me, and they're concerned. In fact, some are arguing that if you're a high-profile person, a civil libertarian, you should leave the country, which I've rejected and said I won't do such a thing. But there's a lot of things going on that should have people, I would say, freaked if you're following the news, but you're not going to get it on television. You're going to get it off of programs like Here's Tom and the people out there that are reporting things. As I say in the book, by the way, it's not what you see on the news, it's what you don't see on the news that's not reported. So how many people, I talk to journalists, believe it or not, and I say, you realize there's 80,000 SWAT team raids occurring annually. That's up from less than 3,000 in the mid-1980s. And they look at me like, what? So most of your journalists are not up on what's going on. I mean, you're having babies being burned, shot, killed, dogs always killed in these raids, John Doe raids where they just show up and go through your door and they don't even have a warrant anymore. And it's happening on an increasing basis. And so people need to wake up right now. I think we have a chance to change things, but boy, are we going to get educated, because education precedes action.
Well, let me raise the traditional devil's advocate kind of response, and that would be, I'm a regular American. I'm regular Joe American. I don't cause any trouble. I don't get in trouble. And the result is the police leave me alone, and there are no SWAT team raids on my house. And this is what you're doing is you're elevating some high-profile cases into a general rule. But basically, if you stay out of trouble, nobody bothers you. And now, by the way, I say that as devil's advocate, but there is a 5% of me that gets annoyed with a certain kind of libertarian. I'm going to get in trouble for this. They go out at 2 o'clock in the morning with their bullhorn. Yeah. And the police tell them to shut up, and they say, "Police state, police state."
Okay. Yeah, there are some people like that. I think I've not run into those kind of folks, but there are probably people like that. As I show in the book, it's a steady progression, but it's like I say, it's picked up steam since 9/11 when the Department of Homeland Security was created by executive order. Okay, I get that question all the time. If I'm not doing anything wrong, why do I care that the NSA is doing all these things? But let me say one thing. I'm a constitutional lawyer. My book has 43 pages of footnotes. So I'm not a conspiratorialist. I document everything I say. I draw conclusions from the facts, which any good lawyer or any good person will do. But to give you an example, the NSA now downloads 2 billion emails a day of American citizens. They're put in computers. They're read. They download almost every text message. They admit now, the NSA, to hacking into 160,000 Facebook pages a day to see what you're doing. Now, Brandon Robb, good Marine, outspoken, served tours in Iraq, Afghanistan. What he defused mines in the minefields to protect the troops, actually captured weapons from Al-Qaeda. He came home. He didn't like some of Obama's executive orders, which most Americans, if you really be careful, you won't like him because he can do whatever he wants to do, basically, like an imperial president. He's a 9/11 truther, which there are a lot of folks running around out there like that. He was saying these things on his Facebook page on a Saturday morning about a year and a half ago. He heard some noise outside. He had just gotten through jogging. He didn't have his shirt on. He walks through the front door, and he looks out, and there's 8 vehicles pulled up around his property. Black-clad policemen running toward his house, people in plain clothes. He steps to a screen door. It's a hot August day, and he says, "What's up?" And they said, "Sir, we'd like to talk to you. Could you step outside?" He did. They immediately handcuffed him behind his back. He was resisting. He was arguing with them, not physically. They slammed him against the fence, lacerated his back, took him to the police station. His mother called me crying. She had contacted every group. No one seemed to care about this particular situation. Well, I called the police chief and said, what has this man been charged with? The cop actually said to me on the phone, he's committed no crime. We're just concerned about his Facebook post. Brandon had a 5-minute examination in his jail cell. The psychiatrist decided because he was a 9/11 truther and he was slow on his responses, which any American should be. If you don't have a lawyer, don't be answering questions at that point. He was given a hearing. He was put in a mental hospital. We filed a lawsuit and got him out. A judge ruled there was no shred of evidence to have him in there. Now, what had he done wrong? It's just traditional free speech stuff. I can go down the list of these kind of cases, but today, if you say the wrong thing, there are over 5,000 federal laws. There's over 5,000 criminal regulations. We're having cases where people have a chicken in the backyard for eggs. The police are actually arriving and confiscating the chickens and charging the people with a misdemeanor. There's a list of these cases in my book. So you really don't have to be doing anything wrong what we used to think, but there's several constitutional experts that say the average American commits 3 crimes a day and they don't even know it. There's so many crimes. You can't collect rainwater in some states. The government says now they own the rainwater. There's a guy in Texas right now serving 17 days in jail for overgrown grass. He had to give up all of his vacation time, and there was a fine with that, by the way. He didn't realize what he was doing wrong. So what I'm saying is, if they decide to target you, if you're outspoken, now here's the other thing. If you're sitting on your butt and you don't give a poop and you're watching the country go down the tube, they probably won't bother you, no. I'm seeing these cases. Again, I detail many of them in my book where your average citizen did not know they were doing anything wrong. And 2 seconds later, they have someone at their door who's handcuffing them. So in the cases we handle here at the Rutherford Institute, we see them. So I know what's going on across the country and the other groups that we work with. I'm not the only one saying this. I mean, we got people on the left and the right all backing my book, by the way. I've got the former head of the ACLU saying, this is a great book, you got to read it. Ron Paul wrote the introduction. Judge Andrew Napolitano said after he finished the book, he couldn't go to sleep. So these are good people. They're not stupid people. These are learned folks out there that are seeing the trends. And what I'm trying to do is wake the average American up to take action before it does. What I show in the book is we seem to be following, very paralleling in a really eerie way, what happened in Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. Very eerily, by the way. And here's the other thing, as I show in the book. Totalitarian regimes never announce themselves with trumpets. No. It's a very subtle transition. How many people realize in 1938 Adolf Hitler was Time Magazine Man of the Year? How many people realize in 1939 he was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize? People loved him in Germany and around the world. We saw what happened there about 1 year later.
All right. Well, now, what do you make of the fact that as this kind of behavior on the part of law enforcement and the courts and the federal regulators and so on, as this expands, more and more people are going to know at least somebody who's had some type of
run-in. They're going to see it, yes.
And, but yet, even though there have been all these cases that you describe in your book and they're people violating a diversity of statutes, it's not by any means all the drug war.
No, it's not the drug war anymore, no.
Yeah, so it's a whole bunch of things. Yet, what do you make of the cognitive dissonance here? There is nothing that is more guaranteed to get you a heap of Facebook likes than if you post something about our brave men and women in law enforcement.
Yeah, I think there are several things going on. One is, we talk about this. I work with a lot of good policemen, by the way. I've actually helped several now develop constitutional courses, which they're having trouble getting in their academies. The militarization of the police academy started about, I'd say, 15 to 20 years ago. So many younger policemen coming out have a different view of their training. The older policemen that I work with, some chief of police, they don't like what they're seeing. Some are resigning based on it. And I quote a lot of them in my book, by the way. These are well-known national figures now. The training has changed. There is very powerful police unions that stop any legislative efforts. I'm not always super up on everything. I didn't realize until about a year ago there was a SWAT team union. You can get no legislation through Congress. It blocks everything. Very, very powerful moneyed unions. So we're up against some pretty powerful things that the average citizen doesn't know about. But here's the key. As a constitutionalist, the Fourth Amendment is really clear. And read your Bill of Rights, folks. And this is the thing that astounds me, is that the average American I run into has trouble telling me what's in the Fourth Amendment. I spoke to 150 lawyers not too long ago, the best, Berkeley, out of Berkeley, Harvard, about our cases. In the middle of my speech, I stopped and I said, can any lawyer in this room give me the five freedoms of the First Amendment? These are constitutional guys that work in civil liberties and stuff. I said, if you raise your hand, I'm calling you. One guy started to raise his hand. I started to point him. He put it down. My wife is to the back of the room. She said they were arguing about what was in the First Amendment.
Oh, wow.
Now, for the last 20 years, I've asked incoming law students in my summer intern program the same question. I haven't found one student who can give me the five freedoms. So what's happened? In the schools now, they have about a half a semester. I've been told this by so-called civics teachers. They have about a half a semester to teach anything about the Constitution. I had a full year when I was in school. I learned about how radical the Founding Fathers were, the principles in the Constitution. That's all gone now. The average student, I just talked to a college class not too long ago at one of the elite schools, and I was astounded how disconnected these people were. They had no idea. These were top students. What's going on in the country? They had no idea what's in the Constitution. So most of us are asleep. It's like I'm telling people, we've been on a 10-day drunk. And we're starting to wake up. The problem is sometimes you wake up, it's too late. So what I'm telling people is you can read my book. It's documented, New York Times sources, all the top sources. It's there. You just have to dig. I dig. I'm one of the few people that gets out there and digs and screams this stuff from the rooftops because I love this country. I'm a former military officer, and I'm shocked that the Department of Homeland Security a year and a half ago, contracted, they didn't buy them up off of foreign markets, they contracted to buy, they have made for them, 1.6 million hollow point bullets, which explode on contact. They violate international law. They're illegal. You had the Social Security Administration purchased almost 200,000 hollow point bullets, they said in their press release, to be distributed to 41 locations across America. How many people know that all the federal agencies now have SWAT teams, IRS? The Department of Education, their SWAT teams actually do SWAT team raids for overdue loans. And I challenge people, look, go on the Internet and look at the case of Kenneth Wright. They took him outside, slammed him face down on his lawn because his wife had an overdue loan. This is happening in America. These are guys coming through the doors. They're not reported cases. You have to dig to find them. The local media doesn't cover them very well. So it's there. Are we willing to do our research as good Americans, stand on the Constitution? And again, we go back to the Constitution. The Fourth Amendment's really clear. The government's not supposed to touch us, enter our home, or do surveillance on us unless they have probable cause, which means some evidence of illegality. And they can't come through our doors unless they have a search warrant, unless it's a super emergency. I mean, they're going through people's doors now, and people are getting, I can go through some of the cases, people are getting blasted away, and they're in the wrong home. That used to never happen in America. 20 years ago, it did not happen.
John, let me ask you, it's hard to know exactly what the role of technology is going to be on this, because it seems like it can swing both ways. You talk in here about different ways you can be tracked using new technology, whether it's in your car or any other way, whether it's reading emails or whatever. But on the other hand, never before in history have we been able to track the state the way we can, at least in its most in-your-face ways. I mean, I can have a cell phone app that lets me record my police encounter. What do you think on net the role of technology is? Is it for good or for evil? Is it easy to draw a conclusion about this?
Technology can be, it's very good. It can be super good if we put limits on it, but there's no limit. When the NSA is downloading 2 million emails a day of American citizens who have done anything wrong, they violate the Constitution. Congress does nothing about it. Absolutely nothing. Most congressmen are dominated by lobbyists, and that's a proven fact. I mean, you don't have to do a lot of research on that one to understand that. But again, I've worked in and out of Washington, D.C. for 40 years. I know. So the thing is that where we're at today, I would say, the transition period. In fact, history seems to show that when you see the violence that I'm talking about against the population, it's the transition to a more authoritarian regime, one that will be a surveillance state where you'll be watched continually, and we're moving in that direction. How many people out there know that your many local police departments now have Stingray devices? They are small little boxes that fit in police cars. They can drive by your home or wherever you're on the street and download everything on your cell phone. Now cities are setting up what they call real-time crime centers, which track your cell phone wherever you go through the day. If you're going to the store, let's say you're a politician, you have an alcohol problem. You go see Alcoholics Anonymous. They know that. Well, the FBI, as I show in my book, is notorious for blackmailing people in politics. That's a fact. So you're being watched wherever you go. I mean, the devices coming to local police are going to be amazing. There's a new one being introduced to local police departments called the retinal obfuscation device. It blinds you for 15 minutes. They point it at you and completely blind you. And here's the thing. They've not done scientific tests to see what it does to the retina of your eye. If you just keep up with minor news, people getting beat up on the streets, unarmed citizens getting shot in the back. I mean, again, I go back. When I was a kid, that never happened. It never happened. You never saw it. Something's changed.
Tell me about, this is a section in your book that surprised me. It's a short section on community policing. I never thought about this, but the term always sounded benign enough to me. But it turns out that community policing basically amounts to turning everybody into a snitch.
Yeah, and again, I can draw parallels to former regimes. What I was surprised by, we did some amazing research at the Ruffin Institute. I wanted to, when I was writing some of my commentaries, which do a week of commentary, I wanted to at least show some SWAT team type raids in Nazi Germany. I thought, gee, they must have started it. Come to find out, very few of that things actually happened in Nazi Germany. They had a program set up, and this is, by the way, there's some really good books out there by college professors who have studied all the records of arrests in Nazi Germany and collated them. But come to find out that almost the majority of arrests in Nazi Germany were from average citizens turning other citizens in. That was at the time a form of community policing where you turn in your neighbors, they get fined. In Nazi Germany, many of them wound up in concentration camps. And we might want to talk about the FEMA thing in a minute. But community policing is a national program around the Department of Justice, and it's basically a program where people are told to watch their neighbors, essentially. And we get the cases. Most of the cases we get involved in where, I mean, there was a case, I think, in Minnesota or Michigan, I forget which state it was, where a kid had a pet chicken in his backyard. One chicken. A neighbor complained to the police. The police chief actually went out, took the chicken out of the cage, if it wasn't home, took a shovel, decapitated the chicken, left the chicken dead in the backyard, took the head, threw it on the front porch for the family to come home. That was and that was somebody who called. We have a case now where we're looking at helping a church who had a Mother Teresa sign on their fence. Neighbors complain. The city now is telling the church they're going to fine them, may take them to court if they don't take down the sign. It's a Mother Teresa quote. It's legal. I mean, under the Constitution, I think we're going to win our case. But we see these cases all the time. A veteran who wants to grow a vegetable garden on a side yard. Neighbors complain. Police come out and say either cut it down or they're going to sign him and may take him to jail. The guy that's spending 17 days in jail now for the overgrown grass was reported by neighbors. So we're seeing the same kind of trends, folks.
But now you're talking about going to the courts. Of course, that's what you do with the Rutherford
yes.
Institute. But on the other hand, you have a section in the book called The Complicity of the Courts.
Very difficult to navigate the courts. When we win a case, it's like hallelujah. It's celebration time. The courts are very difficult to navigate. The Supreme Court, in 9 times out of 10, votes on behalf of anything the police want to do. I mean, I list all the cases from taking your DNA now at police stations when you're not even found guilty of anything. You've just been arrested. Strip searches. Now they can do strip searches where they go inside your pants. Supreme Court's upheld that in the Florence case. I went down the list. I mean, watch out if you get arrested these days. And I'm telling people, if you're pulled over the side of the road, watch out. Be careful. I think you should state your rights, but you better be careful how you state them. And you can go to our website at Rutherford.org by the final. We have a constitutional section which goes through your rights. But today there's a lot of people getting slammed down. Malaika Brooks in the state of Washington, pregnant, 6 months pregnant, argued with a policeman about, they said she did a rolling stop. She argued with them. They pulled her out of the car, slammed her face down, and tasered her. She was 6 months pregnant. That case was fought all the way to the Supreme Court. Malaika Brooks lost. They said it was a reasonable action by the police. The Supreme Court refused to hear the case.
Well, what are you going to do in that situation? And yet,
there's not much you can do. I mean,
yeah, and yet kids are still taught in school this civics lesson about the way the courts work and the three branches and what the purpose of government is, as if none of this has happened.
There are good judges out there, and I think one reason I write my books like Battlefield America is that judges do read them. I mean, I'm trying to educate judges, everybody, that we're all together here. We're citizens of the state. I tell policemen one thing the policemen, a term that's rolling off their lips that I don't like is the word civilian when they refer to us. And I told a policeman a couple of months ago when I was talking, he said, well, the civilians. I said, sir, I'm not a civilian. I'm a citizen, and so are you. We don't have a standing army. George Washington warned against that. He said, don't have a standing army. We faced it in the American Revolution. I mean, local police departments, why does Florida need 36 grenade launchers and 47 MRAPs, mine-resistant armor protection vehicles? Why does Texas need 74 of those and $24.3 million worth of Black Hawk helicopters? I mean, your local police now are so militarized. And I have friends who are gun owners, and they say, well, I'm getting my gun. I go, dude, put the gun down. You'll get blown away. As I argue in my book, I mean, nonviolent militant, Martin Luther King called militant nonviolent resistance is the way to go if we're going to do anything and get involved in your local government. We can change the things. There's a lot of hope out there. I look at the government like I do in my lawn. When I walk through the lawn, I see a bad weed. I pick that weed up and throw it in the garbage. And your government's like that, too. If you got a government that doesn't act, you need to get down there and pull that weed. And that means by political action, getting your picket signs, and taking action. You can do it, but you're going to have to get up off your butts and do it, folks.
All right, before I let you go, I do want to say something about the idea of detention camps. I had Judge Andrew Napolitano on this program not too long ago talk about his own new book, which has to do with civil liberties.
Yeah,
and
good man,
I was noting to him that I thought that in some ways things were worse, but in some ways things were better, in the sense that I personally consider it inconceivable that the government could get away today with what it did to the Japanese Americans in the early 1940s. That just never happened. It's just not conceivable.
It depends on the type of crisis, yeah.
All right, so
I mean, when 9/11 happened, they were around. They were pulling over in cities and grabbing what they thought Muslims were, taking and putting them in, just grabbing them. I mean,
that may be, but I can't imagine
that was a be. Actually happened.
You know, over 100,000 of them would be confined for a matter of years.
It depends. But it depends on whether you know about. Just to give you the facts, in 2006, George Bush gave Halliburton, which a large corporate entity, $385 million to build FEMA camps. Shortly thereafter, I would say about 3 years later, I had several of my attorneys contact Halliburton. We just wanted to answer the question, did you use the money? They referred us to the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice referred us to the FBI. The FBI referred us to the Department of Homeland Security. The Department of Homeland Security referred us to Halliburton. It went around the circle for 2 hours. No one would answer the question, yes or no. So do I think they spent the money? Yes. If there are detention camps, there may be some in isolated areas, but they're probably on military bases. That's what I've been told by former NSA agents.
So I've heard what everybody
else
has heard
about. If they're out there,
And I don't know what to think. I mean, maybe not. What would it be used for? If there's general civil unrest, like what would you use these things for?
Well, when they set the FEMA camps, the legislation said that they would be set up for a growth in immigration or, and this is the key phrase, the development of new programs. What in the hell that means? You can take a guess at that one. But again, I see paranoia. The American government's given their agents hollow point bullets. The Department of Homeland Security, by the way, their agents have three times the amount of ammunition as a ground troop has in Afghanistan. And it's be used on American soil. You're eight more times likely to be killed by a policeman in this country than a terrorist. And this is the statistics. The FBI says, this is the FBI statistics, violent crime is at a 40-year low. Policemen getting shot in the line of duty is at a 50-year low. 2013 was the lowest murder rate in a century of Americans killing other Americans. These are citizens. So why all the armored equipment, hollow point bullets, etc.? I mean, it doesn't take a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. That's Bob Dylan, by the way.
John, how can people get a copy of Battlefield America? Amazon?
Amazon.com.
And we'll link to it on today's show notes page, tomwoods.com/388, for this being episode 388. We'll link to the Rutherford Institute, rutherford.org, which is people can learn about all the important cases that you guys work on there. And I'll link also to your previous appearance on the program when we talked about your previous book, A Government of Wolves. I got a lot of tremendous feedback from that conversation. So I'm very glad you're able to come back and join us again today. Thanks, John.
Hey, thank you, Tom, and thanks for sounding the alarm, okay?
I appreciate it. Thanks for all your work.
Thank you, sir.
All right, everybody, please do check out tomwoods.com/388. If you haven't checked out the show notes pages that I've been doing for the past roughly 100 or so episodes, now that we've got the show on its own site, tomwoods.com, and no longer just a page on the Peter Schiff site, please do that. Weekend's coming up, and take a few minutes, go over to tomwoods.com/episodes, get the whole episode list there, and just click on one and see just how much stuff is on those show notes pages. There's a lot of labor put into those, and I'm getting a lot of good feedback on them, so make sure and check those out. Anyway, in episode 386, I mentioned that I had seen somebody wearing an Unapologetically American shirt, and I just went off briefly on just low IQ nationalism that just drives me crazy. You know, it's just taken right out of Mitt Romney with his book No Apology, right? I don't care what the U.S. government does. I'll never apologize. Like, this is the worst kind of state worship of all, really. Because when they say, I'm not going to apologize, they don't mean they're not going to apologize for their own behavior. They mean, I'm not going to apologize for what my overlords do. Like, that is serious, serious Stockholm syndrome there. Well, anyway, somebody posted this on my Facebook page. Make sure you like my Facebook page, by the way. Don't look for me as Tom Woods. Maybe I will eventually try and change that page to just Tom Woods. I have a page, Tom Woods, that I use for personal use. I don't really post there, but I use it so that I can comment on what other people write. But I have a page, Thomas E. Woods Jr., so you can follow it at facebook.com/Thomas E. Woods. Please do that. Anyway, this gentleman wrote, on today's episode, you mentioned seeing someone wearing an unapologetically American shirt and subsequently disparaged them for doing so. I felt compelled to respond considering the fact that I am both the editor-in-chief of the website, unapologeticallyamerican.com, and brand manager of Unapologetically American, in addition to previously working with some people you probably know in the political arena. First, I'm a huge fan of your show. I've been a regular listener and have promoted one of your books on multiple occasions in my writing. Second, I am very much a proponent of the free market. My writing on UA, meaning Unapologetically American, is a testament to that, and I will happily show evidence of my promoting much of the same thought you do on your show. Third, UA is not about American nationalism or some type of American-styled fascism, and I certainly did not use the word fascism. But anyway, going back to his statement, far from it. Point of fact, I have on numerous occasions denounced the sort of American nationalism that was discussed on this episode of your show. We believe in differing opinions and happily showcase multiple points of view, both on our website and our sister site, The Rhino Den. While I am very much of the libertarian mindset, we have writers who embody beliefs that more closely align with the typical definitions of conservative, progressive, or others. Fourth, the ideology behind UA is much more about celebrating what has made America great, private entrepreneurs, innovators, etc., than it is about being one certain way. Several of our shirts reflect that very idea. Fifth, I am quite serious in saying I'm a fan of your show. I don't miss an episode, and I've learned a lot, so thank you for doing what you do. Well, that was a very, very gracious response by somebody who had just been slapped in the face by me, so I really do appreciate that. So I wrote, I appreciate what you have to say, and I'll gladly issue a correction on Friday's episode, which is what I'm doing right now. And I said, you should realize, though, that with Mitt Romney writing a book called No Apologies, a shirt like that is bound to be interpreted in the same light. And then he responded and said, oh, don't get me wrong. I completely understand why it would be seen in that light. I just wanted to clarify what we were about and what I write frequently on, namely much of the same material you cover on your show. So there is the correction there. I did want to point that out for the record, and I appreciate the kind and generous feedback. And I'm not so sure I would have been so kind and generous in his shoes. I probably would have lashed out. So I appreciate the generosity on his part. Well, guys, if you appreciate the show, do please consider supporting it by being a supporting listener at supportinglisteners.com. You will get the Kindle edition of my book, A Real Dissent, A Libertarian Sets Fire to the Index Card of Allowable Opinion, plus many other benefits depending on the level of support that you're able to give the show. I've got all kinds of things, discounts on libertyclassroom.com, lifetime subscriptions at libertyclassroom.com, all the homeschool material, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of videos I've produced on history and government for the Ron Paul Homeschool Program over at ronpaulhomeschool.com. You can get that also at supportinglisteners.com. It is suitable for adults as well, so don't be ashamed of listening to it. I also send signed books to people who support the show. I offer discounts at Liberty retailers all over the place. It's just a boatload of benefits. So do please consider that at supportinglisteners.com. Spend the weekend catching up on episodes if you're doing work around the house. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.
The Tom Woods Show.